if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 343. This is our 2025 Players Championship Tips podcast. The returning Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, discuss our selection for this week's huge PGA Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Visit our world-famous Golf Betting System website where we have in-depth betting preview for the players. We've got stadium course at TPC Sawgrass, strokes gained rankings, detailed form stats, plus, of course, new and old predictor models for all of the Sawgrass golf action. Our content is available completely free of charge. There is no paywall. On X, you can follow Barry at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. We are on Blue Sky. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available each and every week. First things first, if you are consuming this podcast on YouTube, we would love to hit 150 likes this week at the players. All of our content, including this podcast, which contains no ads, is completely free. So if you like the pod, do the decent thing and please subscribe to the channel. The button is just below the screen. Also, press that five-star button if you are listening on Spotify. I'm confident, I think, lads, we can smash through the 650 like barrier on Spotify this week. Right, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. We're coming very close to Augusta. So we would like some new reviews. If you could spend 5 minutes or even 2 minutes this week on a review, that'd be fantastic. Now, this particular review is from Steve the Linguist. You're going to love this one. Going to absolutely love this one, boys. Steve the Linguist, and he is in Memphis, Tennessee. I listen to you weekly. You guys are the best. This is the bit you're going to love. My favourite part is Steve's deep dives into guys like Ryo Hitsatsune, Aldridge Potgieter, Adrian Dumont de Chassard, and Nikolai von Dellinghausen. Thanks again. That is Graham from Memphis. He is literally just trying me out there, isn't he? He's feeling me out.
Yeah. Amazing.
He's missed a trick there. Could have asked you to do a Christian Bazudenhut.
Yeah, or of course, my nemesis, Hideki Matsuyama.
Oh, dear.
I thought he left Hideki off because you'd finally almost mastered it to a play school level. So that's a great review.
Oh, dear. Yes, brilliant. Thanks for that.
Thanks for your time, Steve. That's much appreciated. I love that. That's a clever five-star review. As I said, new reviews. We're down to one left. So I've got one for next week. After that, we're blank. So please, wherever you are, Australia, America, Canada, the UK, Ireland, if you could send a review over, that would be fantastic. Paul, I know this is going to be extremely painful. I know that we want to talk about the players. We don't want to think about last week, but we have to, unfortunately. Let's start with Sean Norris at the Joe Berg Open. Mm. Over to you.
Yeah, well, what can you do? I mean, four shots clear going into Sunday is the kind of position that you want your golfer to be in. And, you know, having played well the week before and then with the weather issues and ultimately, you know, a round on the third round last week of anything under par, which would have won in the golf tournament, which he contrived not to do. After that, you know, I stuck with him. I know you were on him last week as well.
Yeah.
And it looked like our faith and patience was going to be rewarded because he was playing so well, despite this ear infection, which he'd been diagnosed with. And he said it wasn't affecting his play, but even so, you know, he got himself into such a great position and then starts bogey, gets himself together, makes the double at 12, and pretty much that's it. I clearly made the putt on 18 to get into the playoff. You'd have thought at that point he's got the momentum, he's got the, you know, the bit between his teeth, and then gets the second hole of the playoff and bangs it in the water, and that's the end of that. Which, yeah, disappointing. You know, ultimately, a profitable week because, you know, he came, you got a full place for him. I got a full place for Danny Van Tonder, and he put three players up. So two out of the three were in the places. So that was fine. But the make or break of your season is going to come down to whether these marginal results go your way. Mm. So Dan Brown at 100-1, missing out on the playoff a few weeks back. Sean Norris as the headline last week, you know, odds on going into Sunday and fails to win. Yeah, a little bit frustrating.
You had 36 hole leader Shane Lowry as well at the APR.
Oh, damn. So, Shane Lowry, too clear. Davis Riley as the only pick over.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you were looking sweet for a. I mean, I'm not suggesting all three were going to win, but you had serious contenders across all three events.
Well, I've made the mistake of doing the maths on Saturday morning to see what the treble would have paid because, you know, I hadn't backed the treble. But there was a point where I was thinking, well, this could have been a life changer, the treble, because when I did the maths, it was just under $250,000 to $1. For Norris, Lowry and Riley, who were each of them in great positions. And no, it didn't matter in the end, did it? The place treble would have been nice anyway.
Mm. But, yeah. Which came in, yeah? Oh, no, I don't think it did. Yeah. It, Lowry was eighth, was he?
No, Lowry was seventh. I had top seven for Lowry, so that was good. Riley finished at the tie for sixth, so there was a little bit of a chop there for the places, but not massively. But yeah, the each way treble would have paid a handsome number.
But yeah. Here's the new level of degeneracy for Golf Betting System podcast. We're not just going for the doubles anymore. We're going for the trebles. The life-changing trebles, yeah.
You can only do that on the weeks where there's three events going.
I know, yeah. But you can't even think. I feel like we can't even think about the possibility of our bets doing well these days because the golfing gods go, huh, really? Okay, watch this. And just destroy it. So, yeah, unlucky Paul. I think we've all taken a few hits this year so far.
Yeah, it's been a bit painful start, but I think, you know, when you're getting players right in the mix, then it gives you some encouragement that the thought processes you're going through are correct or largely correct. Mm-hmm. And then the final furlong, the final fence. Sorry, I've got my head in Cheltenham. That's where, you know, it's up to the player to see it over the line. And yeah, it just isn't quite happening at the moment. But this week will be the week.
I'm going to read this out from old podcast friend Harry from Wimbledon. And when I saw this email pop through on Monday morning, you know it's bad when Harry emails you. I've resisted the temptation to get stuck into some golf bets so far this season until I heard last week's podcast. Paul's reasoning for backing Sean Norris was so cogent, logical and persuasive that I had my first DP World Tour bet of the season. I felt so pleased with myself throughout the latter part of the week and settled down yesterday for what I hoped would be an enjoyable and stress-free watch on Sky, as Sean did the business. I should have known better. Talk about 5 hours of torturous stress, and it all ended in a watery grave. I got the place money on my 25-1 bet at least, but I'm not quite sure whether to thank or curse you, Paul, for what your tip put me through. Well done, nonetheless. As ever, Harry, in some very, very good words, has pretty much summarised Sean Norris to a T there, I think.
Yeah,
it was the way he was sweating up. that really concerned me. And I could not work out for the life nor money why he just kept going with three wood off that tee. And every time he hit it, it was getting... I mean, the first one in regulation was great drive. The second one, he literally was on the side of the bunker. And then the third one, of course, he just bangs it straight into the bunker. You just think, you know, there's not a lot of strategy here. You either go with a shorter club or just go with driver and get over that bunker. But clearly that would then bring water into play on the left. But yeah, it wasn't great viewing. It has to be said.
No, no, that was his game plan. And ultimately it wasn't the right one. Well, yeah, as you say, worked in regulation, but yeah. Another week gone.
I'm going to have a moan about Justin Thomas, by the way. He was in second place as I was watching on Saturday evening, and I was starting to get a little bit excited. I'm thinking, yeah, look, Justin, JT, 5-under, sole second place, playing with Keegan Bradley, the Ryder Cup US captain. When I saw that on Saturday morning, I thought, that's going to either be the thing that really clicks or it doesn't. Because all of a sudden, JT's actually playing with the Ryder Cup US captain. Started okay in second place. He then finished in 36th, 28 holes later. He pumped in 5 bogeys from that point on Saturday and 6 on Sunday. So 11 bogeys in total across 28 holes. I just thought I'd go into, because JT and I was, you know, at the end of the day, I pick my own losers. And Barry, you weren't here last week, but it was always a recipe of disaster. I went for Patrick Cantlay, Tommy Fleetwood.
I was on JT too.
It's just, you know, what's going to happen? So I don't really know why I'm moaning. But I just thought I'd go into the detail this morning of how he lost all of these bogeys, just for anyone that's thinking about backing Justin Thomas, right? Right. One of the bogeys because he hit water off the tee. That's a surprise. 5 of his drives were way off the fairway, plenty in trees, the other side of trees, cart path. So that's 6 bogeys via the driver, 2 via 3 putts, and 3 via poor approaches. So all in all. And then you look at JT's stats for last week, and they don't actually look that bad, apart from the fact he lost, I think, about 5.5 strokes with a putter. And then you go back into the Players' Championship market on the Monday, and guess what? JT's at 18 to 20 to 1, the same price again the week after. So I'm just wondering, what do you think? I mean, Keegan Bradley didn't have the best of Saturdays, and then he clearly rallied on Sunday to produce a course record 29 across the opening 9. But Paul and I were discussing this off mic yesterday. Remember the Zach Johnson cavern of players at the Ryder Cup last year? It's all on full swing. They're all sitting there in their house. There's Jordan, there's Justin, there's Zach, and they're all having great fun, aren't they, around the table at all of these tournaments. And they both got into that Ryder Cup team through captain's picks, yeah?
Yep.
And who didn't get into that team via a captain's pick? Keegan Bradley. So I wonder if it comes down to captain's picks for the likes of Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, will they get them from Keegan? Or will they not? Well, I honestly couldn't tell you.
Remains to be seen, but he wasn't very happy, was he? And that much was evident from the full swing episodes last year.
Then you got Spieth moaning that he didn't get an invite into the API.
Yeah, I liked the way they did the invites for the API. It was more meritocratic, it seemed. But it's going to be interesting if Bradley just makes the team on merit. What do they do? Everybody seems to be freaking out on commentary on the TV about him making it, and they need to get another captain in, and et cetera, et cetera. I wonder if a playing captain could be just the thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's why you have vice captains.
Yeah.
If your captain's distracted, they're there to back you up. So
it doesn't have to play himself for 5 sessions either.
Correct. Yeah. I think it's a cool thing. They should just steer into it and embrace it.
Scheffler, Xander, Colin up to 3, Henley up to 4, DeChambeau at 5, McNealy at 6. So if the qualification was to end now, that's your 6 autos. Cantlay, Finau. I mean, how? Finau at API last week. I mean, there was plenty of out of bounding and water. As I say, don't ever back Tony Finau at a course that features plenty of water. 9 is Brian Harman, who's struggling. Horschel's not exactly tearing it up at 10. JT at 11, Harris English at 12. Outside, Clark, Michael Kim, step forward. I mean, this guy is playing unbelievable golf. I'll go into that later on. Keegan Bradley himself and Daniel Berger. Over in Europe, McIlroy, Hatton, Rasmus Højgaard, Shane Lowry up to 4, Ludvig Åberg at 5, Thomas Dietrich at 6, Thomas Dietrich. Then you've got Nicholas Norgaard, Wallace, Cantor, Fleetwood, Paul Waring, John Parry, early doors. I get all of this. Mm. Over in Europe, of course, you've also got McIntyre starting to play some really nice golf. Sepp Straka, Justin Rose is grinding on these tougher tests. The one player, again, that really struggled was Victor Hovland, and his performance on the greens was crazy last week. I'll just take you through the top 10 API tee to green, right? 10, Aaron Rye. 9, Ben Arne. 8, Victor Hovland. 8th was the best from tee to green across... 8th for tee to green across his 36 holes. His putting performance, as you would expect, to miss the cut, was disastrous. Bradley at 7. Will Zalatoris, dark horse, 6. Corey Connors, 5. That Michael Kim, again, at 4. Russell Henley at 3, Scotty Scheffler at 2, Colin Morikawa number 1. Any takeouts from the API from you, Barry? Were you back in Ireland at that point? You were back from Barcelona?
I was, yeah. I got back on Friday evening. I watched a reasonable amount over the weekend. It's tough through the tears of losing to France in the rugby, but you know, we picked up a bit of it. It was. I liked the way that the rough was a challenge, mixed with the firmness in the greens. You know, so you missed a fairway, there was a penalty. So that was good. Sometimes it felt like maybe a bit too much of a penalty, that they were only chopping out 50 or 60 yards, and there wasn't the temptation to, or they weren't being able to be tempted to go for the green and get themselves in maybe more trouble. But then that's a fine balance, I'm sure, that there's, you know, if you take a half an inch off that rough or an inch off that rough, then all of a sudden they're fine. They're able to fire at the greens again. So I thought it was a nice different challenge from what we've seen earlier in the season with just outright birdie fests.
Yeah.
So, yeah, variety is the spice of life, and was a very welcome change. And it's certainly... we needed to see the players challenged on a tough course that was asking questions. They're not the same questions you'll be asked this week or in the Masters, but it was good to see a bit more of a difficult test be laid down and who reacted well to it and who didn't.
Mm. Yep.
Just to highlight this, I know I'm not Russell Henley's greatest fan. I know he's just landed his biggest ever tour title, so fair play to Russell. That's his 5th PGA Tour victory. But his numbers were incredible. If there was a Magic Beans winner of the API, this was kind of Mackenzie Hughes, Cameron Smith-esque last week. You listen to this. He gained 12.72 strokes total. 6.38 of those were around the green. 3.6 with the putter. That's 10 points of his total 12.7 with the short game. Mm. That is Magic Beans Jordan Spieth-esque.
Yeah.
But it got
punctuated,
the job
done. But that's... 17th hole was just, yeah, basically, yeah, that was
there you go,
how it all came together.
Mm. He was second for greens in regulation. And this backs your point up, Barry. Second in regulation, 66.67%, only made two-thirds of the greens on greens in reg. That just showed you that it really did bring, with those firm, crusty greens, short game into the mix. Right. Paul, quickly, can you just highlight, because we're going to have fresh listeners this week because it is the Players' Championship. Can you quickly just highlight in 30 seconds the majors competition that we have for 2025, sponsored by Bet365, please?
Yeah, so it's been running for a few weeks now. Lots of entries, but do get your entries in if you fancy playing. We want one different name for each of the four majors. So one for the Masters, one for the PGA, one for the US Open, one for the Open Championship. Send us your picks through via X, via Facebook, via email, and we'll collate a leaderboard of all the entrants from all around the world. And basically, you get scored based on the dollar earnings from that chosen player for that chosen major. So if your player does well in that major, of course, you're gonna earn some theoretical dollars. We'll create a big leaderboard of everybody, and at the end of the Open Championship, we'll declare a winner who wins £150 or currency equivalent in cash, £75 to the second player, £25 to the third placed player. Free to enter, bit of fun. Do get your entries in. We normally have a good few hundred players enter, so it makes it nice and competitive.
I think, Barry, you're in play, aren't you, of your entry? Oh, no, you literally leave yours until like 5 minutes before the first players tee off at Augusta, don't you?
I got to try get every advantage. Yeah, exactly. I perceive that as one getting closer to the first event. So,
if you're 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of their bet £10, get £30 in free bets, new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in this podcast description. Don't forget to use the bonus code SPORT30. That is SPORT30 when registering. Right, let's talk Players' Championship. The fifth major. I can hear people screaming already. It isn't the fifth major, of course. But it is the PGA Tour's premium event, played at the stadium course at TPC Sawgrass, Pontevedra Beach, Florida. Got to say, personally, much prefer the Players in March to what we used to see in May. I think the move back to March has really helped this tournament. I just think it suits for the course conditions, the weather, everything about it. I will refer you to my full detailed betting preview for more of the real nitty-gritty information around this. But worth pointing out, TPC Sawgrass and the stadium course has gone through a bit of a revolution over the last, I'd call it actually a quiet revolution. It hasn't really had, you know, it's a bit like Augusta. These players turn up the next year and, oh, the course is different. There's significant changes. This year is interesting. They've added another 51 yards since 2024. So they've added, and listen to this, they've added further course yardage to 11 holes over the last 12 months. The main changes have been in collaboration with Davis Love III, and I know that he's going to be working on the stadium course ongoing from this point. They've added 51 yards, including three new tee boxes across three of the par fives that they extended one last year. They've extended the other three this year, the second, the 11th and the 16th. The iconic tree has also been re-established on the par four sixth, with a further 20 holes yards being added to that hole as well. The 14th hole also sees deeper and dramatic moguls, with additions of palms, oaks and native grasses in the right-hand side rough. So this is the best way to look at this from my perspective. 2021, this golf course played as 7,189 yard par 72. As of this year, 7,352 yards. So they've effectively added, 4 years, 170 odd yards to this golf course.
Mm. Yeah, it's getting on for 200, yeah.
I've recategorised it. I'm now thinking it's a medium length golf course. Clearly, Florida style, water everywhere. 18 of the 18 holes, 17 feature water hazards. 92 bunkers, acres of fairway, 26. As we get at this time of year, fairways, Celebration Bermuda grass, overseeded with Champion Fine ryegrass. Same for the rough. And based upon last year, they've added another half an inch to the rough length this year. So we are looking at, Barry, 4-inch rough in play this week. Greens, 5,500 square feet, much smaller than Bay Hill last week. They feature Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. However, they are overseeded with Poa Trivialis. Tournament stint being quoted at 12.5. I think, looking at the forecast, they will water the greens as well. I don't think we're going to see anything approaching API. Purely because, and I spoke to the boys about this off air before we started recording, there was Sunday and Monday, tournament Monday yesterday, they recorded 28 and 49 millimetres of rain here. In old money, that is 3 inches of precipitation. So this course, as of Monday afternoon into Tuesday, will be very, very soft. I know they've got sub-air, they've got all of this. I think this and Augusta are the two most controllable golf courses on the planet. But Thursday and Friday, very, very calm weather, very scoreable. I still think by Thursday you're going to get cut on the fairways. You know, you're going to get some of those huge divots when they're approaching the greens. I don't think you're going to get huge amounts of roll on the fairways. And I would have thought you're going to get receptive enough greens to really go target hunting. But it's the weekend that really looks interesting here. Up to 30 mile an hour gusts from the southeast on Saturday. Up to 25 to 30 miles an hour gusts from the south on Sunday. So it's really going to be a tournament of two halves. I'm really looking forward to it. Really, really looking forward to it. Anything you want to add, boys, before about the course, the tournament itself? Anything that's taken your fancy on the betting potentially, or players you want to lay? Chuck it out there now for the listeners before we go into our selections.
That the wind forecast is certainly going to make the 17th interesting, particularly over the weekend. It's always good to see a bit of drama, any kind of wind on that, whether it's a crosswind or whether it's coming from behind the players or into the players, causes masses of uncertainty. So expect those water ball numbers to be escalating quite a bit. That should, I always enjoy that. Always a good thing to watch. Interesting about the conditions underfoot, because a longer course, you know, and it's still not excessively long, is it? But it's getting longer. Rain softened fairways, how dry they can get those before the tournament starts remains to be seen, but I suspect it's still going to play fairly long. The rough, as you said, is thick, but if that's combined with a bit of moisture in there as well from over the weekend, then that's going to, I expect it's going to be pretty soggy and pretty tough. But for me, this whole tournament's about a player who just excels in his one or two areas that it doesn't strike me as a kind of event that is centered around length or centered around accuracy or centered around putting or chipping or whatever. I think the player who goes there and plays to the very best of his ability, no matter what his key strengths are, can compete and contend around here. It's the beauty of the tournament, I think, is you get a real mix of different styles of players, a real mix of fade and draw holes. And I know you included in your preview a quote from Michael Kim about how he'd broken down the holes, which I found interesting because it looks like we've got a pretty even split of fade and draw holes. So players who can move the ball both ways or comfortable with those kind of shot shapes should be feeling comfortable here. And also the stat that I picked out of this, just looking at previous performances at the players prior to players winning, I went back 20 years and the only player that I could find that didn't have a previous top 25 finish round here was Scotty Scheffler in 2023. Unless I've missed one, every other player going back to 2004 and probably beyond that had a top 25 here. So a previous positive outing of some description here. Certainly a previous outing here, because I think you said in your preview again, Steve, that was it back to Craig Perks in 2002, I think it was?
Yeah.
Was the last debutant here. So
yeah,
coming in with some history, coming in with some prior performance. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to have come super close to winning, but yeah, top 20, top 25 in the past here seems to be a positive as well. So plenty to put into the mix this week to try and fathom out who's going to win, I think.
Did the arrival of the mountain of rain on the weekend change any of your thoughts about who you're backing? And part B is, what are the key things you're both looking for this week? I know we've got that overall vibe, but like, it's a very equitable golf course, but what were the key things you were trying to look for in who you were backing?
I think it will help the longer players this week, just because we've had that rain. I know they can control the course. As to how much they can control the fairways remains to be seen. I suspect there's still going to be a bit of cut in the fairways. If, as Steve articulated, there's that much rain that's come over the last couple of days. So maybe a little bias towards power. But then with wind in play over the weekend, it could be all changed. You could have a player or a series of players that are in the mix going into the weekend, and that could materially change by the time you've got through to Sunday night.
I'm just going through my old records here to see if we had a renewal that was soft across. I'm not suggesting this will be soft across the whole tournament. Clearly, you got 2022 with Cameron Smith, but that was just craziness. I mean, it was blowing 50 mile an hour winds, and there was a huge, huge, huge bias in the. To be fair, this course drains so well and has such great sub air. You tend to get a soft golf course for a round, maybe two maximum. I don't see it lasting all week. They will water the greens though, with that forecast of wind at the weekend. I think by the weekend you're going to get nice amount of roll on the fairways, and I think at that point you're going to get soft greens, but you're going to be fighting a real battle against the elements, and that's Florida Gulf, isn't it? Florida Gulf is famous for strong winds on a flat, watery golf course. That is Florida Gulf in an essence. I'll tell you what I will do as well quickly. Just strokes gained rankings, last four champions of the winners within the field that made the cut. Off the tee, 17th, approach, 5th, around the green, 13th, tee to green, 8th, strokes gained putting, 35th. That's crazy. For me, in my analysis, I have really focused on people that have got fantastically crisp approach play at the moment, and they also have to have an excellent around the green game. That's where I'm at. 77% of total strokes gained in the last 4 years, tee to green, only 23% with the putter. And that includes Cameron Smith in that potentially, well, it was just atypical, where basically he was hitting the ball brilliantly on his approaches and making so many serious putts. He gained some record amount of strokes gained with the putter that particular week. If you look at the other three winners, two being Scheffler and one being JT, if you can really have a tight tee to green game, positive around the greens and a small positive putter, I'm talking 0.3 up to 0.5, as long as your approach play is top notch and you're not hitting the water off the tee, you've got a chance of winning this. It's a very metronomic golf course, and it challenges a lot of players because they simply can't blast their way around it. So Rory McIlroy's win here in 2019, for me, was particularly impressive because it kind of works against what Rory McIlroy is. Rory McIlroy at his pomp is Quail Hollow. It's, you know, it's incredible driving, but he actually managed his way around here and won here in 2019, the first year that they brought it back from May to March, if you remember.
Yeah.
I've got 5 in my selections. How many have you boys got?
I've got 3, one from the top, well, one from near the top, one from the middle, one from around the three-figure mark.
Barry?
I've 2 definites and a few that I'm figuring out here. I'm tortured. Most of my focus has been on a lot of the tee to green, and one of the key ones I'm looking for this week is greens and regulation. I just feel like with the neutral putting requirement, or maybe you want to get slightly positive, just, and you don't want to be messing with that any sort of juicy rough in places. Just, yeah, I want that accuracy. So that's kind of where I'm getting to. And some players that I had in mind, looking at some of their stats, they're now maybe dropping off the list. I'm in a tough spot at the moment.
For me, it feels like a Jordan Spieth nightmare, this golf course. I'm just trying to articulate players that it doesn't work for. This golf course, the metronomic nature of it, the fact that as soon as you're missing fairways, you've got real problems on your hand. If you're hitting it straight and you're hitting your driving lovely, this golf course is very scorable. I'm not suggesting it's really scorable when it's gusting 30 mile an hour on Saturday, but you get my drift across Thursday and Friday. If you are a Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas type driver of the golf ball who has got a bad drive probably on every 9 holes, you're staring at doubles and triples. Tony Finau is another that this course just simply doesn't suit because he hasn't got the mental capability to just keep the ball in the fairway consistently across 72 holes. And if you look at Finau's record here, I think he's got one top 20 in like 7 or 8 appearances. That Michael Kim note you mentioned earlier, Paul, is also, I mean, this literally describes this golf course and the beauty of Pete Dye's design.
Mm.
7 of the holes feature holes that favour a fade. 7 of the holes feature holes that feature a draw. Of course, I'm talking there about the par fours and the par fives. It's just, it's a beautifully metronomically designed golf course. And in very rare circumstances, a Cam Smith can win purely with the putter and with approach play. But in most cases, it's fantastic tee to green, positive around the green, and a putter that just about can break positivity. Doesn't Team No Putt is in effect this week, it has to be said. As long as you're not hugely negative on the greens. Clearly, if you're putting 0.3, 0.4 and your tee to green game is bang on it, you're in contention this week. Seriously in contention. First selection for me, I'm going against Scotty. He hasn't been overly popular in the market. I'm seeing him drifting. He's drifted out to 5-1. I haven't been positive on Rory. I'm getting the feeling with Rory, he's starting to do what Rory often does before the Masters. He's tinkering with stuff and playing with stuff that... And then Sunday threw away all of the stuff he was tinkering with and went back to the driver that... Sometimes I think Rory outthinks himself. It's like he's got too much time on his hands. I don't know. I just don't like
that. Do you think the grouping with Scotty and Xander is just overkill? I think it's going to compromise. I mean, I think there's a good chance it could compromise one or multiple of them in their performance this week. Just that spotlight focus on the big marquee group.
Great point. I'm also going to highlight this. And this was a great point that was raised on X last night. Can't remember who raised it, but this is something that I've kind of skirted around in the past, but it completely gone over my head this year. 14 of the last 16, 14 of the last 16 players champions, Thursday morning, Friday afternoon, T-split. Thursday morning, Friday afternoon, T-split.
Wow.
Rory, Scotty, Xander go out Thursday afternoon, as does Colin Morikawa, as does Tommy Fleetwood, as does Patrick Cantlay, as does Keegan Bradley. I'm not going to go through the whole list, but there's a lot of high-class elites. Daniel Berger. They're all going out. Justin Rose. They're all going out on Thursday afternoon, which only two of the last 16 have gone out Thursday afternoon. One of those was Tiger Woods. I believe the other one, I'm guessing here, but I think it was Webb Simpson. So that's a big old headwind that those guys are going against. Right, my first selection is actually going... For some reason, four of my five have actually been, supposedly been put in the right half of the draw. I am going for Colin Morikawa. I got 3 points each way at 16-1 with Betfred. I thought that was a very good price from Betfred. In fact... Four of my five bets, Paulus is correct, all went with Betfred this week. Eight places each way, standard market. So worthy of note that Betfred had some really good prices and eight places each way. I'm going to read through here a list. The last 20 rounds, you had to a minimum of 12 to qualify this. This is total strokes gained. Last 20 rounds, right. 8, Sepp Straka. 7, Tommy Fleetwood. 6, Russell Henley. 5, Colin Morikawa. 4, Rory McIlroy. 3, Scotty Scheffler. 2, Michael Kim. Number 1, this does include DP World Tour. I know this is going to, people will listen to this and just throw it straight out. All I will say is Laurie Cantor at $6,000 on DraftKings is an absolute steal. Laurie Cantor, number one, last over the last 20 rounds, strokes gained total across both the main tours. Mm. I'm going for Colin Morikawa, sitting there in fifth place. If Henley hadn't have chipped in last week on the par five, Colin Morikawa wins that golf tournament. So I'm more than happy to take 16-1 about Morikawa. And if you, in my mind, if you're looking for the kind of player that should play well here at TPC Sawgrass, medium length driving, haven't got a problem with that. Straight driving, absolutely loving it. Someone that's crisp approach playing, a decent around the green game player. I don't think you're struggling too much with Colin Morikawa. For me, he's the modern day. I know people shoot me down. He's a modern day Jim Furyk. Just fairways and greens. The weak point is the putter. And as we've already gone through, if Colin can putt at 0.2, 0.3 positive this week on the greens, got to be a contender. So 16-1, 3 points each way. I've gone Betfred, 8 places each way on Colin Morikawa. Paul, who's your selection at the top of the market?
I think Morikawa's got a slightly nicer swing than Jimbo. I take your point on that. I agree with your assessment at the top of the market, and I think it's interesting now that the tee times have come out as well, because while you were talking, I was frantically checking my players' tee times. But thankfully, two of my three are early starters, which is good. In terms of the top two in the market, they've proved pretty friendly, haven't they? Rory, long game seemed a bit off last week. Lost strokes gained on approach as well, so... and only marginally positive tee to green. So, I wonder if your assumption of where he is in terms of his preparation has, has some bearing on it. Bit of a hit and miss record here as well. As you said, one in 2019, but also missed the cut six times. So, I can't go near Rory. Scotty going for a three-peat, which is a pretty rare occurrence.
Isn't it? It's Steve Stricker, isn't it? 09, 10, 11, Colonial, was it?
Yeah, Stricker and Tiger, of course, has done it. But other than that,
it's difficult.
It's pretty rare. So should he do it, then fair play. And he does, he does make his own rules up and he's changing history as he's going along. Is that good? But I don't think he's quite there right now. Lost over five strokes putting last week, and his putting has been significantly better of late. So I'm not quite sure Scott is quite there. 26th of strokes going approach last week. So I don't think there's much juice in either of the guys at the very top of the market, and that's why they seem pretty friendless. So, but no, I've gone a little bit further down. I've gone with Ludwig Åberg, who 18-1, I thought, has the talent to take on these guys at the very top of the market. If you look at the last five winners of this, McIlroy was sixth in the world, Thomas was third, Smith was 10th, Scheffler second, Scheffler, of course, first. So each of the last five winners of the Players' Championship were top 10 in the world. Ludwig sits there, bang in the middle, number five at the moment, and I think that's a perfect spot to pick our winner from this week. Generational talent, Ludwig, as we know. Last week, first start since winning the Genesis, 22nd overall. I think that's a solid enough effort. Second for strokes gained off the tee, putted okay. Closed with a 68, which was the third best score on the day, and that should give him some confidence coming into this week. Eighth here on debut last year. He was negative strokes gained putting last year as well, and seems to be putting much better now. More accomplished player now, has had that one outing here to acclimatise himself to the course and to get to know it a little bit. I think he can push on from that. And I think 18-1, I've gone each way with it because there's always a risk that one of the guys at the top could have that week that you really don't want him to have. But happy to take that price and see how he goes. I can't see Ludwig not being in the mix this week. I think he's going to be there or thereabouts.
Lives in Pontevedra Beach, has been practicing here in the build-up with his coach.
Feels like the kind of players whose name could quite comfortably sit as Players' Championship.
Goes out at 8:24 Thursday morning in a group with Hideki Matsuyama, course expert, Justin Thomas. What's the betting Justin Thomas shoots 11 under?
Just to he does like a fast start. That's a Barry bet, that is, at Justin Thomas first round leader.
That might be the way to deal with it, Steve. Just hope that he's has a water allergy for the first round.
Do you think I should put a fiver on him first round leader just to quell the obviousness?
Well, I'm going to do, now that it's been suggested, if you do not do it, it will click. So let's at least I'll put it on as well with you, Steve. We can win or lose in solidarity.
What's the what's your first bet, Barry? What's your price point?
I don't get excited by Colin Morikawa because he's just so generic. Generally very good, but doesn't blow my skirt up. But everything's screaming to bet him, so I think I might have to do that, and he'd be the one of the shorter prices. We all know how I'm allergic to short prices, but he'd be the one of those that I would back. I have, you know, Scotty's got, you know, gone for three in a row. There seems to be just one or two shots that are keeping him away from, or just, you know, scoring, not particular shot types, but just keeping him away from that win at the moment, the last four events. Of course, Rory would love to win this, but I think we all know where that little focus is. It's on Augusta in a few weeks. And I think if I were Rory, I'd be working my game into a shape that's going to be perfect for Augusta. And if you fall into a win between now and then, great. But like what Tiger used to do, he'd hit shots during this stretch that were tuning his game for what he'd need at Augusta. So I'd like to think Rory's doing something similar, because that's the one he needs. Oberg, yeah. I think that's a good bet as well, Paul. I think it'd be surprising if he's not thereabouts in the mix come Sunday.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think the Morikawa train is just a bit overwhelming. And hearing that he has his little baby fade back and he feels comfortable what he's wanting to hit and how he's seeing it, that's a pretty good combination for a guy that was untouchable for nearly a year when he was on it. He was winning crazy, so yeah, I think that would be there. Let's see, JT, thanks for pointing out those key factors, Steve.
That took me 20 minutes to dig all that out.
Yeah. Look, it feels like a win's coming soon. Maybe just the course is not the right... doesn't have the right amount of forgiveness built in. What do you think about Xander? That's interesting. Like, the price 22s can be found at 25s.
Paul and I had this discussion last week. You're not going to get Xander at these prices for too long. And clearly, he was just shaking the rust off. Just on Morikawa before we move to Xander. Fifth off the tee. He was eighth on approach. Eighth for around the green. That's the mix I'm wanting. Eighth approach, eighth around the green at API, first for tee to green, and he lost 0.12 with the putter. Now, as we said at API, winners there traditionally gain over a stroke each round with a putter. Year in, year out, Colin didn't do that, got beat by someone chipping in for an eagle on 16 on the par 5. If he can just eke that up to 0.2, 0.3 on the greens this week, has to be a contender. Of the top guys, for me, it was a straight pick between Colin Morikawa and Ludvig Åberg. So,
I mean, Morikawa may not even need that unless something crazy happens. Look, he's fourth in driving accuracy. He's first in strokes gained tee to green. He's 33rd in greens and regs. So, I mean, I'm going against what I was saying. I was looking for this week. If I don't back him, I think I've talked myself into it.
Xander, there's 25s out there.
Mm.
It's just, when is it going to click? You don't know. I don't know. At some point, it will. I haven't seen that price about him for, well, a long, long time.
No. No, pre-major win kind of price that, wasn't it?
It was interesting. On Saturday, he got in on the number and he literally played with himself the first round of the morning at the API by himself. That must have been a chastener. Golf, it's a cruel game sometimes, isn't it? But yeah, great price. Could be a great bet.
It'll be one of those ones in hindsight. If he goes really well, everybody will be smacking their heads. Why didn't I back it? 22-1.
I don't know. I can't say it.
There's nothing in his stats from last week that would suggest that... I mean, he was a reasonable driver, reasonable approach. It was actually at around the green game. So he's not a million miles away. It's just rust, isn't it? It's how quickly he can clear that.
Get himself back up to match fitness. And like many of the others, the focus will be Augusta in a month's time or 3 weeks' time, whenever it is.
Mm.
This will be part of that process of getting himself match fit.
My next bet, and I always bet this guy more often than not at this golf course, at the stadium course, is Shane Lowry. What are your thoughts, Barry?
He
Paul was on last week's pod just talking about forgiveness. You know, Sean Norris, forgiveness. And Paul did forgive. And Sean gave him a real run for his money. Ultimately, came up short.
No, Shane should have won.
Over eight, well, of course. Eight Shane over the first 36 holes last week at API was playing some fantastic golf and then fell apart on Saturday. And we have seen it before with Shane when he's leading. But it's just the golfing gods, isn't it? You look at it, the way that he's playing, his approach play is crisp. He's around the green game, is where it usually is, and he's putting nicely. And he's got a decent record here. And that forecast across Saturday and Sunday, it feels Shane Lowry-ish to me. So I got on board 1.5 points each way at 40-1 with Betfred, eight places each way on Shane Lowry. You're a bit of a Shane whisperer, Barry. Are you interested in that bet at all?
I am and I haven't. It's a difficult one to square off at the moment. Paul, the forgiveness thing is a good angle, but like asking the post-it note master to forgive is like asking a great white shark not to kill. So I'm not saying Shane's on the post-it note of doom, but you know, Steve has those tendencies to be a little bit aggrieved by golfers that don't deliver. He's an amazing set of stats. So he's 72nd in driving accuracy, 139th in greens and regulation, and yet he's 14th in strokes gained tee to green. Mm. So it's just a fascinating merging of these stats that you think should be kind of a little closer than those wide gaps. We all know Shane's short game skills are top level. I'm more interested in somebody else around that price.
Pray tell.
I'm tempted to play by Robert McIntyre. He's probably a little bit further out, actually, to be honest, than Shane. So Bobby Mac, things that kind of caught my eye. So 15th in strokes gained tee to green, 23rd in green and reg. Just getting his head up there in kind of higher echelon events. I'll be taking a good chunk of places, but you know, I can get him around 50, 55 to one. Maybe 60s, so I'll have to figure that out. Yeah, I don't know about Shane. I want to sit in the fence. You know who else I'm on though, Steve? Like he's right there beside him in the odds. I'm with you, so.
He was chalked up. First price I saw Monday morning with Bet365, eight places each way. It was the typical Sepp Strucker price, 55-1. He's now been backed into 33s across William Hill, Ladbrokes, Boyle Sports are at 30s. I know they're 10 places. He has been smashed, has Sepp Strucker.
Yeah, proper plunge on him.
I managed to grab 45-1 with Bet365. I've gone 1.5 points each way. To me, this is a perfect Sepp Strucker golf course. And if you look at Scottie Scheffler over the last couple of events, he won on Bermuda grass before winning here. And of course, we had that with Sepp when he took out the American Express in January. There's something in that about players that have got a decent top five performance on Bermuda in the season before taking this out. So Sepp is ticking every single box I was wanting. So yeah. Is it a full hat? Are you on Sepp, Paul?
No, we'll have to rewind a little bit because I'm on Shane.
You're on Shane?
Yeah. And
so you're showing that you're showing again an immense amount of
just Father Paul is forgiving his students.
You're the forgiveness Paul. You're like a new man.
Well, do you know, if he hadn't have finished solo seventh in the end last week, perhaps it would have it would have made my decision a little bit more difficult. But once I'd conceded that he wasn't going to win, it was all about him making sure that he got a full place, which with a little bit of assistance, he just about managed on Sunday. So that was fine. If you boil it down, there was a three-hole stretch on Saturday which effectively torpedoed his chances. He went double bogey, par on the par five, double bogey, 6-5-6 stretch. Had he gone 4-4-4, so par, birdie on the par five, par, then he finishes on 11 under. That's the same total as Russell Henley. He was super close. And can I forgive him just for, you know, a very short stretch of bad holes? Well, I have. I've done it. I mean, his form's progressive generally, 39th, 11th, 7th. Gained nearly a stroke per day with a putter last week, which I think is interesting. He has been a bit up and down with a putter, but if he's putting comfortably and putting well coming into this, then I think he's worth taking a chance on.
Yeah.
As you say, the weekend forecast looks good for him. I like your Abu Dhabi link in the preview because there's certainly some crossover with Abu Dhabi Golf Club and players that have performed well here at Sawgrass over the years.
A lot of carryover.
There is, yeah. Best of eighth here, which ticks the box that I articulated before. So, yeah, I'm going to forgive, forget, keep the faith, Shane Lowry. And, 40-1 was worth taking, I think.
I like the Lowry-McIntyre duo there. I think both have got real merits. What are your thoughts, Barry, on Keegan Bradley? As you see, I resisted this week, Keegan Bradley.
I've been dying to ask you about this. The guy's playing fantastic golf. So, and there's a lot to love about him in terms of the metrics going into this week. Is the question mark there over it may become all too much for him because he loves it too much and he gets a bit too deep into it. You know, it might just overwhelm him. Oh my God, I could be the players' champion. This would cement me on the Ryder Cup team. I'd be the Ryder Cup captain. How does that impact him this week? And particularly if he's in the heat of the battle on Sunday. I mean, maybe the pressure makes a diamond and he wins. But, I mean, it's you that needs to decide if you want to back him outside of your tip, Steve.
He is on the wrong... If there is the wrong side, he's on the wrong side of the draw, is Keegan. Just for reference, Shane Lowry is on the right side of the draw. He plays with Russell Henley and Victor Hovland. Robert McIntyre is also on the right side of the draw. He's playing with Max Homer and Sung J.M. at 9:19 Thursday morning. So, yeah, I managed to resist Keegan Bradley. I've now got 80-1 and 90-1 chances. Where are you boys chiming in at?
Just one at 100s for me.
Okay, Barry?
Yeah, I'm moving out as well. Yeah, so I've, McIntyre and Straka, I like those. And I might just end up putting a small bet on Larry just to not miss the party in case it works. But my next one is... Nick Taylor.
Been popular.
Yeah, definitely saw what the opening price you had listed on the site was 140s, but he's now down to kind of 100s. So that's still lovely. I'll take that. He's 18th in driving accuracy, 19th strokes gained tee to green, 11th greens in reg. Just stealthily under the radar of, you know, versus the bigger names. So that's why he's 100-1. Recent winner. Do you guys have anything to add on Nick Taylor?
Knows how to win, doesn't he?
I think he's playing the best golf of his career. That's my thought.
Yeah, he does manage to get himself over the line, which you you can't say about every other player, particularly plenty that are sitting at shorter prices above him in the market. I can see why he's been popular. I can see why you're on him, Barry.
Yet another one of these guys, and we've said this before, wins, was it? Is it five wins now on the PGA Tour? Always, before you know it, he's been drifting out to 125 to 1, 140 to 150 to 1. Yep. You always get a good price on Nick Taylor. I've gone for Mr. Hypnotic. Just fairways and greens, fairways and greens. Aaron Rye. Lives in Pontevedra Beach, apparently. Bought a house here before the 2023 Players. So he doesn't live in Wolverhampton, as the PGA Tour website says. 19th and 35th here in two appearances, so he ticks the box of experience. I remember him in the Cam Smith year being fourth entering Sunday. Finished 19th. 15th at the Century, 11th last week. Played well in Mexico. His ball striking is back. That's the key with Aaron. 33rd for off the tee last week, 23rd for approach. 14th for around the green, exactly what I'm looking for. 10th for tee to green. He's in. I just like Aaron Wright. And we were on him last year when he won the Wyndham on Bermuda grass greens. I think he won it in Hong Kong going way back in his DP World Tour history.
Yep.
Smaller, tree-lined, short to medium length golf courses, Bermuda grass on both of those sets of greens, Van Ling. So yeah, fourth and 11th. I can see Aaron Rye. I think he's the kind of the guy that, especially in Ryder Cup year, if Aaron Rye had a good year in the States, he's going to be there or thereabouts. He has to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of carrots for a player like Aaron Rye this week. There is a boatload of Ryder Cup qualification points. He reminds me of the tip I put up last year on Brian Harman, who missed the putt on 18 to take Scheffler into a playoff. Mm. Just the kind of guy that's going to plot himself around. Let's be right. Aaron Rye is not going to win at a Long Bay Hill golf course. Just isn't really going to happen. He just isn't long enough off the tee. But somewhere around here where he can plot his way around, like it. Final one. I've already mentioned him. Second over the last 20 rounds for strokes gained total. I'm on the Michael Kim train. 90 to 1 with Betfred, 8 places each way. I think this is probably in the top three stories of the season so far. Michael Kim, where has he come from? He's now 52nd in the world. He just needs one more strong top five. I mean, this week would be perfect. Top five here. He's playing the Masters in a few weeks' time. He'll burst into the mid-30s on the world rankings. Job done. And that, for someone of Michael Kim and the story that, you know, his story in golf and the highs, but more, you know, more pertinently, the lows of Michael Kim's career, that's a huge thing for me. I mean, he's on the fringes of Ryder Cup qualification, you know, and we're in the middle of March. So it's an incredible run that the guy's on. Second in Phoenix, 13th at the Genesis Invitational. That was a signature event. 13th in Mexico. He's then come to Florida. 6th at PGA National at the Cognizant and 4th last week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. And when you just look through the amount of people that have placed here over the years, players in hot form that have done well in Florida leading up to the Players, there's just a whole list of them. So it's bloody obvious, but 90 to 1, Michael Kim, Betfred, 8 places each way. There'll be a lot of people arguing, saying, hey, it'll come to run this, that and the other. You cannot argue against the guy's form and the way that he's playing. So big, big carrot. Interestingly enough, first for bogey avoidance on tour so far this year. So my five, Michael Kim 90-1, Aaron Wright 80-1, Sepp Straka 45-1, Shane Lowry 40-1, Colin Morikawa 16-1. Paul?
Yeah, I've been humming and ahhing about Michael Kim. I think it's a great story. It's great. He's one of the most active on X now.
And, brilliant follow. Brilliant.
Yeah, he is. And there's a lot of good stuff that, and a lot of insight that he gives as well. And as you say, it's great to see him playing well. I wouldn't be surprised if you're right there and he does sneak himself into the kind of position that A, pays an each way payout, and B, gets him into the Masters.
I'll say one last thing on Michael Kim, Paul. Five straight tournaments, he has been positive strokes gained across all four categories.
Yeah.
Now that is consistent golf.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows how well he's playing, and he's been talking about it on socials. So, yeah, I've got a feeling you could be right there. But the one that I've backed at 100-1 is Ben Griffin, who was third here to halfway on debut back in 2022. You talked about Sedgefield, the Wyndham, and there's some good links to that as well, isn't there? As well as the links to Abu Dhabi. He's finished fourth and seventh at Sedgefield from his three starts, and playing some nice stuff. Fourth in Mexico, 10th for scrambling, 6th for greens regulation that week, 4th at PGA National as well, where he was 2nd for driving accuracy. So lots of elements of his game coming together. 8th and 11th for strokes gained putting on his last two efforts as well. So some really nice numbers coming through with Griffin. And I think, like Michael Kim, he's the kind of player that could sneak through and grab a top 8 finish and pay it out from an each way perspective. So yeah, Griffin, Lowry and Ludwig Gobert for me.
Any more for you, Barry, before we finish?
Just the usual token bet on Joel Damon.
Yeah, you never know.
He played well with last year, didn't he?
Yeah, likes a grind. So he has my support money. So can't cheer for him on the ground. So yeah, there we go. That's it.
11th here last year. Closing 67, 67, 68. It was a shame about the 74 in round one. But yeah, Damon's the sort. Again, it's just like he's an Aaron Rye sort, isn't he? Just fairways and greens, navigate yourself around the course. Get that. That's us then, chaps. I wish you the best of luck with your bets. We need a change of luck on the team.
Yeah. It's coming this week. Best of luck, boys. Enjoy the golf. You should be a good boy. Yeah,
you too, lads. That's why I went for so many bets, just to try get something to cross the line. So, it's hard not to in a big event with all the big names. You just get suckered in. You're like, oh, he might do it. Oh, he might as well. And I think the volatile nature of this event makes you want to give yourself a little bit more insurance and coverage, because most of your guys could go and miss the cut, and then you're goosed, you're restarting. So give me a few horses from the start.
Absolutely.
Sorry to use a Cheltenham pun, but it could look on your punting tomorrow, boys, in Cheltenham.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
It can only go badly.
Lose my shirt.
Yeah.
We'll be on the 9 o'clock train from Paddington. Paul's told me he's not going to have a drink on the way there. I don't believe that.
That could change in the morning.
Say that might start your vertigo, so maybe we shouldn't.
Yeah, I don't know. It might balance me out. I'll be all right.
Might help you. If you're listening on YouTube, just forget, if you could press that like button, that'd be much appreciated. Also, Spotify, press that 5-star button. I hope all of your bets and DraftKings teams go well at the Players. We'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the golf betting system, the golf